Peter, bueno, sin duda que nos ha removido muchos de nuestros paradigmas y nos ha planteado muchos desafíos muy importantes, muchos de los cuales están siendo tenidos en cuenta por el sector, pero sin duda que hay mucho para pensar. Hemos recibido tres preguntas. No sé si queda alguna más por venir, pero creo que es válido plantearlas todas. La primera se refiere al vínculo, la estrategia de inserción de Australia. Dice así: ¿puede Australia tener una buena relación comercial y acuerdos con China y Estados Unidos al mismo tiempo?
Yes, that's a very, very interesting question. And the issues between the United States and China are far greater than my ability to handle, and probably Australia's ability to handle as well. I think the United States definitely recognises that Australia has a commercial interest in China, and also can be helpful to brokering political arrangements between China and the United States. I mean, China is our biggest customer for all of our export products. No, it's big for beef, but when you go into the minerals, the coal and so on that Australia exports, it's even a bigger customer. So there's very, very significant commercial relationships between Australia and China. And those are recognised by the United States. And in fact, the United States, for all its political difficulties with China, still wants to get beef access into China and is working hard behind the scenes to get beef access into China. So, you know, commerce speaks all languages, and these political difficulties will rise from time to time, but, you know, commerce will continue to flow.
Thank you, Peter. Bueno, la otra pregunta está relacionada con los millennials y dice así: el origen de la alimentación, la identidad que usted comentaba, es un indicador relevante. ¿Qué propone para esta generación de milenio como política estratégica para Uruguay? Creo que esto fue respondido en buena medida en la presentación, pero sí plantea una pregunta al final y dice: ¿qué debilidades y fortalezas tiene Uruguay?
Look, it's obviously difficult for me to comment on that question, given that I've only been here a few days, and one's got to be careful about being an expert within a very short time. I mean, the thing that I will observe, that I think, and Federico can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Australia has more auditing of on-farm systems, just from my observations and my discussion with people. So for instance, each time that cattle are sold in Australia, the farmer must sign a form that represents the treatment that those cattle have received, whether they've received antibiotics, the drenches that they've received, and so on. And then auditors come in and look at auditors come in and check that farmers have correctly stated what's occurred. So I think that's a big difference, and that's leading to other changes. I mean, such as the certified grass-fed. I mean, you've got wonderful grass-fed systems here. But what customers are increasingly looking for is for independent verification of those systems. And I think perhaps Australia has travelled a little further down that path than Uruguay.
Bueno, la siguiente pregunta está formulada en inglés por uno de los participantes y dice: en los próximos meses, Uruguay estaría adoptando un sistema de mercado de futuros para el ganado. ¿Qué cree usted que sería el impacto de esto en el mercado ganadero, si es que tiene algún impacto en el mismo?
Well, that is very interesting. I must say that that is the first that I've heard of that news. And let me confess something, that one of the great failures of my working life with Everlay is that I was unable to get a futures market in Australia up and running. We attempted to do so on a number of occasions, and in fact had a futures market operating for about 3 years, but it eventually failed, much to my disappointment, because I think that it's incredibly important. I think a futures market does two things. One is it gives you information. I mean, it gives you information about, on average, what people expect to happen with prices and other things over the term that the futures contracts operate. So it's an important information device. And the other thing that, of course, it does is assist you with risk. And there's secondary products that then spring out of having a futures market operating. Now, I don't know in Uruguay now how many forward contracts are being offered by packers. But the fact that the packers can lay off their risks on a futures market ought to encourage the development of forward markets. And of course, agriculture is inherently risky for all sorts of things. Climate, but also price volatility. And I just think that these sorts of developments are, you know, incredibly important with allowing farmers to some degree control those risks.
Thank you. Bueno, tenemos dos preguntas más. La siguiente dice, si tuviera que elegir entre China versus Japón, Corea como mercados, como clientes, ¿con qué se quedaría y por qué?
Look, we can prefer any market. We prefer any market that we can access and get. I think China and Korea have been long-standing customers of Australia, and so they're very important markets for us. And of course, many countries, including Uruguay, does not have access to Japan anyway. I know you have access to Korea. Having said that, I mean, Japan is going through enormous economic difficulties. You know, it's got that aging population that I talked about. It's had minimal economic growth over a very extended period of time. And that's affected beef demand. It undoubtedly has affected beef demand from Japan. Beef demand has been pretty flat in Japan, boy, for about 20 years, or almost 20 years. So the growth markets, I think Korea still will grow, particularly with the tariffs, with the free trade agreements that the United States and Australia have managed to negotiate. Then Korea will eat more beef. And China, over time, I think as incomes continue to rise there, because what I didn't say in my presentation, it really isn't up until you get to being upper middle class that you can afford beef on a significant scale. And, you know, I mean, China, people make the mistake of thinking of China's China, but it's just a whole lot of separate markets, really. And certainly up in the north of China, they're already eating a lot of beef. Beijing and north of Beijing, they're eating a lot of beef. So that will continue to grow, I'm sure, even though it's been flat over 2 years now, I think it will continue to grow.
Thank you, Peter. Bueno, la penúltima pregunta, y creo que ya estamos en tiempo, hacemos las últimas dos. Dice así, ¿qué consejo nos daría para que la mujer que compra en el mercado elija la marca Uruguay?
Okay. I should ask my wife this question, right? I'd honestly have to think about that question. I mean, I think important to females is obviously the health benefits. I mean, one of the things that we've done in Australia is just emphasise the iron content of beef and how important that is for females. So I think we've got to continue to invest in those sorts of areas. But I don't know. I'd like to know your secret on how you get your population to eat 60 kgs of beef a year.
Great. Bueno, la última pregunta. ¿Cómo impactó en Australia la integración vertical de empresas chinas en la ganadería e industria?
The Chinese investment in the cattle industry in Australia is still relatively small. They've bought a couple of packing operations in Australia. They've bought some farms. I mean, the biggest farm that they bought was a huge cotton farm in western Queensland. You might have read in the newspapers that they offered to buy one of our major cattle operations in Australia, Kidman's, it's called, a very old traditional operation that's been around since the late 1800s. Owns I think about 1% of Australia. So, you know, Australia's huge, and to have a single company owning that amount of land is very significant. And the government has stepped in and stopped that sale. So the Chinese company that was buying it has been prevented from buying it. And that's pretty unusual in Australia. But look, all over the world at the moment, I think it's an issue that we all face. There's a degree of suspicion about outsiders coming in and investing. The NFF, the National Farmers Federation, so that's the peak body in Australia, in response to the government blocking this move, said, no, we need outside investment in agriculture in Australia. So that message is being fed up is being delivered from the farm sector, but the government listened to other voices.
Bueno, estaríamos dando por concluida la parte oratoria y de preguntas. Ayer un comentario, yo por lo menos me quedé con la sensación después de estos 40 minutos de charla que uno, queremos más, uno se queda la sensación de que nos remueve tanto los conceptos que uno quiere poder intercambiar más. Ayer tuvimos un taller de trabajo con Peter, con los gerentes de INAC, donde analizamos esta presentación y más en profundidad durante 3 horas, más 1 hora y media de almuerzo, y todos nos quedamos con la sensación de que faltaba más tiempo para profundizar.